And there are, you know, interested persons, oligarchs, globalists, whatever you want to call them, who are manipulating race hatreds and class hatreds and other similar hatreds, sort of Marxist style, in order to advance their own agenda through it. The antidote to this isn't to fall prey to the hatreds and to engage in a sort of ill-advised combat with the fools in Antifa or Black Lives Matter or any of these aberrant sort of Marxist movements. The real remedy is to practice Christian virtue, which includes forgiveness. I'm not saying, you know, run out in front of an Antifa demonstration, let them poke your eye out, and then just yell, "I forgive you," at them. That's certainly not going aside from the fact that it's an imprudent thing to do, and prudence is a virtue. Aside from that, it's not going to have an immediate effect. I mean, in your ordinary life, to practice these virtues so that you're not subject to the kind of manipulation that the oligarchs and their allies in mainstream media are constantly subjecting us to by exposing us to these hatreds. They want us to lose our peace. They want us to descend into this chaos, this madness of violence and hatred in order to manipulate us. We have to rise above it. And the only way to do that is to practice Christian virtue and live the life of grace. You're listening to Reconquest on the Crusade Premium Channel, part of the Veritas Radio Network. Now, I would like to, in this episode number 240, where we're talking about forgiveness as part of our spiritual combat, I would like to sort of switch gears right now and probe deeper into the subject of forgiveness using the insights of a very respected French spiritual writer named Father Jacques Philippe. Father Jacques Philippe. By the way, I encountered something yesterday. I put up on social media a prayer that was recited by Père Marquette, Père Jacques Marquette, the great French. He was really an apostle. He was really a Jesuit missionary in the New World. We tend to think of him as an explorer who did a little bit of priesting on the side. He was really a priest who did a little bit of exploring on the side. And the exploring was for the purpose of missionary work, right? He wanted to find the Mississippi, the father of waters, so that he could get to the I believe it was the Illinois Indians to evangelize them. And he ended up converting at least one Illinois Indian on the way, a dying man, actually, whom he baptized right before he died. But this was, for him, finding the Mississippi, which he found the northern part of it, whereas the Spaniards had found it in the south. He was doing so in order to get onto, as the French were so good at, one of those highways that would lead them to where the Indians lived so that they could be evangelized. But somebody pointed out to me when I did this link, he said, "I have a friend who insists that Father Marquette's first name is Pierre." Well, French priests are called Father, right? And in French, that's Père. So it's close in pronunciation to the fruit, you know, pear, like as in I eat a pear or I have a pair of socks. So that's pear, that's father in French, from pater in Latin. Then there's the name that also coincidentally means rock in French, Pierre. Pierre and pear are two different words, right? Two very different words. Now, if a priest was named Peter in French, he would be Père Pierre, but that's a different question. So please don't call Jacques Marquette Pierre Marquette. It's Père Marquette. And please don't call Father Jacques Philippe Pierre Philippe. It's Père Philippe. Okay, now that I've gotten that out of the way, Father Philippe is a very respected French spiritual writer. And as I've told people recently, unlike most people whom I like to read, he's not dead yet. He's a living author who is a member of a French community called the Community of the Beatitudes. And the book that I'm quoting here is, or that I'm quoting from and borrowing a lot of ideas from, is called The Eight Doors of the Kingdom, and it's a book in eight chapters on the eight Beatitudes. And yes, each chapter covers one of the Beatitudes. He has a disproportionately long treatment of the first Beatitude because he said all of them kind of have to be related to it. So a large chunk of the book is chapter one. Anyway, moving right along. So forgiveness is terribly abused in our day, both by excess and by defect, as I said at the beginning. By excess, forgiveness is often abused by being made a free pass for evil. For instance, because certain prelates are, quote, forgiving, impenitent adulterers are admitted to sacrilegious communions. This happens because of Amoris Laetitia and all of the bad pastoral practice that has surrounded that. By a similar sort of forgiveness, predatory homosexual priests have been shamefully granted further access to young and vulnerable victims. Especially in these present days of orchestrated Black Lives Matter and Antifa mayhem, examples could be multiplied of false forgiveness indulging fashionable vices. Forgiveness is an act of the virtue of mercy, as we've already said. And as that virtue is very much misunderstood to the detriment of the other virtues, so too is forgiveness abused. Ironically, by removing the incentives to contrition and amendment of life, this false sort of forgiveness actually puts genuine forgiveness further away from the sinner. So in other words, the caricature of mercy is profoundly unmerciful. But we also abuse forgiveness by defect, and we who object to the opposite abuse, that is, the excessive abuse of forgiveness, we who object to that must be attentive to defective forgiveness in ourselves. We might, for instance, be prone to kind of the spirit of Phariseeism. I'm not saying that every traditionalist is a Pharisee, good Lord. I mean, I'm not saying that. I don't believe it. But every man breathing who believes something that of standards, you know, like their standards of right and wrong, is subject to the temptation to be Pharisaical at times, right? So it's simply one of those pitfalls that we have to avoid, just like any sin or any vice. When we fail to forgive, we harm not only the person to whom we refuse forgiveness, we also harm ourselves. While I sometimes find points in the works of Father Philippe, whom I've introduced as my guide here and my source for a lot of these thoughts, I do find a lot in his works that I disagree with. Maybe not a lot, but sometimes I wince or grimace or whatever when I'm reading. But all that said, he's quite worth reading. His treatment of forgiveness in The Eight Doors of the Kingdom has some of the most sublime thoughts that I've ever encountered on that subject. The book is a series of meditations, as I already said, in eight chapters. So therefore, forgiveness is treated in chapter 5, which concerns the beatitude of the merciful. This beatitude is unique, as Père Philippe points out, because the merit and the reward are identical. Now, what do we mean by merit and reward? Well, I've said it before, but each one of the Beatitudes has a merit part and a reward part, right? So, blessed are the poor in spirit. Poor in spirit, that's the merit. For theirs is the kingdom of heaven. That's the reward, right? Each one has a merit. Each one has a reward. Every Beatitude has a similar structure. This is the only one. This is unique, in as much as it is the one that has the merit and the reward being the same thing, notably mercy, or namely, I should say, mercy. Having recently read and reread that chapter of his book, I'm going to borrow heavily from Père Philippe in the rest of what I have to say here. Now, why am I doing this? Because I find a serious urgency during these days. I've already said this, but I'll say it again. When hate and anger and hard-heartedness are being multiplied. Moreover, I am specifically preaching to the choir, inasmuch as those who are called to witness to the church's authentic traditions, including certain difficult truths, like, I don't know, for example, there's no salvation outside the Catholic Church, are also called to suffer for these things. And that's something that we can't leave off of the table, right? Those who cause the faithful to suffer are among the proper subjects of forgiveness, right? If we are working to defend the Catholic cause, any Catholic cause, we're obliged to practice the Christian virtues that such work demands of us. Any kind of Catholic cause, if I have a noble Catholic cause I'm going to defend, well, it's not just a matter of, writing effective things that people will read. It's not just a matter of delivering effective rhetoric that will stir up people's hearts to follow you and your cause. It's not just the work itself. It's also the penumbra of circumstances that surround that work, including how you interface with your enemy, including how you interface with your fellow laborers in the vineyard, So we're constantly being put in situations where we have to practice virtue. We can't look at any kind of apostolate as the day job and like, oh, wait, I checked out, I clicked on my time card and now I don't have to practice virtue because I was doing the virtue thing on stage for the sake of the apostolate. Now I'm checked out. It's me time and don't bother me. So, you get in my way, I'll blast you, right? No, that's not permitted, We can't have this self-adulation and exaltation of our self-importance in any work of any apostolate to the expense of the real living of the life of virtue. In fact, this is the devil having fun. Excuse me, I just whacked my mic. This is the devil having fun with those who would be Catholic apostles, by tempting them to commit all sorts of sins against the life of Christian virtue and delude themselves to think that they will be effective apostles, right? I'm not saying that in order to engage in any apostolate, you have to be already perfect. That's not my point. But you should be striving for perfection if you are engaged in a work of the apostolate. Because if not, especially if that apostolate is somehow public, then you are setting yourself up, and the church, by the way, for a fall. The church herself always stands. She's immortal. We know that. She's the mystical body of Christ. But in men's eyes, she can fall when somebody who presumes to represent her while not attempting to live the life of virtue makes himself and the church look bad by making a particular Catholic cause look bad. So those of us who are called upon to give witness to tradition, to give witness to perennial church teaching, to give witness to the church's traditional liturgy,